I think there's a piece in the Irish Times yesterday, Gerry, that talked about, you know, it's very hard for people talking about climate today without having very little good news, if any good news. I think what I'm going to be really trying to get across in the conference is a sense of, number one, the climate change, we're already in it. It's not coming. It's here. And we can see that. And I'm going to give some demonstrations of the temperature rise in England during the summer, you know, the Pakistan crisis today, you know, the California drought crisis. Because I think there's something about the human species, Gerry, that can understand there's a problem but doesn't accept responsibility for it. And I think at the moment, a lot of our guidance on this is, rightfully so, policy level down. In other words, it's upon government and companies. But I think there's very little understanding by the individual as to actually, well, your behavior has to change as a consequence. I mean, we're going to entice you to buy an electric car, but just because you buy an electric car doesn't mean you should go to San Francisco tomorrow because you want to go to a wedding. So, you know, I think there's this sense of trying to bring the reality home that the weather pattern changes we're now seeing are imminent for all of us in different forms, whether it's drought, whether it's floods, whether it's storms. And it's trying to go through that in detail. And I'm going to start by talking about the Risk Society and how this has been talked about as part of my research in 1992, 94, that modernity has now moved towards society being made up of risks. And as a consequence, climate change is one of those risks that we now have to deal with. COVID was another, you know, 20 years ago was HIV or whatever, but now the risks are coming faster and more onerous on us with regard to our individual lifestyles. And work that I did, it was on a German philosopher called Ulrich Beck, and I always remember the piece that he said, the latency phase of risk threats is coming to an end. The invisible hazards are becoming more visible. Instead, they strike home more clearly, our eyes, ears, and noses. In other words, we're in the middle of this. It's not coming. It's here. It's landed. It's getting worse. How worse it gets, it depends on how much carbon we burn. And if we continue to burn it at a personal level, it doesn't matter what policy government offers, we're not going to reduce this threat.
Okay.
So I think it's that. And then it's really trying to shift that onto the tourism industry's context and saying, well, guys, what do you do? And for me, there's two markets here. There's the existing market that we have plundered for the last 50 years, especially with regard to air travel, which is come and see us and people travel. I think that's going to diminish, I would suggest, quite significantly the next 20 years because of the climate pattern disruptions breaking down the enjoyment of going to visit a location. For example, at the moment in Pakistan, some very famous tourist attractions have been destroyed by the current floods. But as that happens, that there's a virtual marketplace about to evolve that will allow people to experience those, but in the virtual world, not in the real world.
Okay.
And how there needs to be an acceptance by tourism to acknowledge that they need to be ready for that rather than believing the old model will never change.
Yeah, and that presents a particular huge challenge for us here in Kerry because we rely on all sorts of markets. We rely on the domestic market, people coming from Dublin, from Donegal, from County Cork, from County Clare to come down to Kerry for the weekend. And then we rely on the international market. Those people flying in, there's very wealthy golfers flying every day in their private jets to Farnborough Airport. They spend a lot of money. Tour guides, bus loads of Americans, French, Germans, they fly in or they sail in, some of them. And we're telling them, come here, get onto the buses, travel around the Ring of Kerry. The more the merrier. We've lots of businesses who depend on their custom. It's going to be a pretty big shift to change that market, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And this is the tragedy, though. The reality is if a storm hits Kerry tomorrow with gale force winds of 9 and all of a sudden the destruction forces of climate change come to Ireland in that form like they've been to Pakistan or like they've been to other parts of the world, all of a sudden they're going to say, well, where's our quality of life? Where's our contentment to be able to get up in the morning and look forward to the weather forecast? I always remember when I was studying years ago in 1992, I came across a reference to dark skies, dark patterns, dark ages. What is that? And it was a supposition at the time that meteorologists will lose the ability to forecast the weather over a week away. because the records of the previous 200 years will become so distorted with the new climate systems that they will be of no value. And we've already seen it, I think, from memory. There was a picture circulating in the Irish media during the week, of, or maybe it was the British, of leaves dropping from the trees.
That's right, the British. Over in England, the heat wave there, a preemptive August, or autumn, I should say. Can we call it that?
Yeah. The seasons are disappearing. The gap between the seasons are no longer rigorously controlled as we've had for the last 100 years. They're gone. We don't know what weather forecast is going to come in a week's time, let alone 2 weeks' time. We're hoping it'll stay as norm. But there's one thing about the human species. It cannot look forward and understand the potential for danger unless the danger is imminent.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a good example. COVID. Man, hit. Everybody. Locked house. Not going outside. Flying to Spain. You must be joking. I'm not going nowhere near the airport. Why? Cause and effect is infection and death. So, yeah, I don't need to fly again. I'm happy. Leave me in my house. Because they effectively became conditioned to understand the threat was so imminent that they had to take the action. The reality is the threat of climate change has been imminent for the last 30 years, and we've never taken the action because we believe it won't happen.
And you feel we still believe it won't happen, really? The businesses, the people operating Kerry Tourism, Irish Tourism, they're not reflecting or getting ready for the reality.
No.
Are you saying that the mass tourism era is over in its current form?
I would suggest it is. Well, it has to be if certain parts of the world are being hit with weather patterns that destroy them. Mm. I mean, I know Pakistan isn't a tourist destination.
Sure.
But if that flooding had happened in China or happened in Australia or happened in Central America, and remember there was a smaller version of that flood 3 weeks ago in Kentucky. Over 25 people were killed. Houses were washed from their foundations. So the only reason we're talking about Pakistan is because I gather it's affected up to 33 million people. Over 1,200 are dead, and over 500,000 people have lost their homes.
Yeah.
But that's not a tourist trail. But if it was a tourist trail, we'd be saying mass tourism is gone.
Then we'd all know about it.
Pakistan.
And what do you say to those who say, look, you know, 30 years ago there was a drought in Ethiopia, there have been natural disasters, they happen from time to time in different parts of the world, usually because of where we are with our temperate climate, very far away, or at least to our perception, far enough away that we don't start panicking about it.
Yeah, I, and that's a great point. But the reality is the science over the last 2,000 years has pulled together evidence that shows discrete changes. And I'll give you an example. Most Irish men today, and not in my, when I was young, most Irish men today know their blood pressure, whether it's, 160 over 120. But if it's 190 over 160, they go to the doctor and they says, we need to put you on a statin because this is dangerous. You could have a heart attack. And the vast majority of men will take it because they understand the risk based on the data. In 1992, again, there's one data point I've always relied on, parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. We were 326 in 1992, the highest it had been in over 100,000 years. The evidence at the time, the data, suggested if we moved to 440, then we'd hit a flip switch and the world would effectively be impossible to recover our data points, our temperatures. That data point passed 416 last week. In other words, the doctor said to me or you, your blood pressure is 220. I need you to take a statin. I'm going, nah, don't worry about it, doc. I'll take the
risk. I'll be fine.
The reality is there is evidence out there, the data points, but the human society doesn't understand them. Mm. Because I partly blame that in government, because they haven't educated them about what is your carbon footprint. And back to your point with regard to mass tourism, I think long travel tourism is in serious trouble unless aircraft decide to go carbon neutral, but also, and weather patterns don't disrupt. But I would be more encouraging people from Donegal and Dublin to come to Kerry for their holidays and their masses rather than necessarily feeling that they need to go to the beaches of Marbella. Because the reality is the beaches in Dingle are going to be as hot as Marbella in 20 years' time.
There you go. That might switch the focus from that point of view. What is the future? You mentioned virtual tourism. How will that work? And I suppose the people listening this morning, how is that going to generate the incomes that we need in peripheral counties like Kerry? To keep us going here, where we depend so heavily on tourism the way it is at the moment?
Yeah, and that's a great question. That's the crux of the matter, I think, with regard to this conversation is the reality. Let's just say we get 5,000 people a day travelling to Dingle, and let's just say that diminishes for a number of different reasons, 2,000 a day. The reality is there's 7.5 or 8 billion people, nearly in theory, who have access to Dingle on a virtual reality headset if they decide to travel there. And virtual reality is now becoming such a powerful mechanism that it can facilitate people to feel and live and experience as the best they can without being there and actually be able to enjoy it. So what I'm suggesting, possibly, and this is up in the air, Jay,
but sure. Yeah, it's
hypothetical. You may have 2,000 people visiting Dingle, but you may have 40,000 people buying the license to be able to watch the particular app, whether it's the Dingle Peninsula or whether... I've been spoken to Liam in RDI recently, and he says there's a number of companies working on building out those virtual reality. I think there's one for Killarney and there's another for Ring and Kerry. And there's a company at the moment building those. Now, they're predominantly being used, and this is talked about in the presentation, to seduce people to come, as in the weather is still adequate enough that you'll make the journey. My point is that if the weather becomes threatening enough and you feel it's too risky to travel 3,000 miles from your home, you're not going to make the journey, but you can have an opportunity to still experience a true virtual. So the revenue stream can still be enabled, but it's slightly split between two versions.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, it's fascinating.
It's
a big jump, is what you're saying, yeah.
But sorry, Jerry, just on that point, you know, when we look at the way society's evolved, when we look at the phone to Zoom, we look at the TV to smart device, we look at mail to email, so many physical attributes of our existence have morphed into a digital presence. I'm not saying it's a preference. On the contrary, I wish that did not happen. But if we're living with climate change as a reality and we have to try and reduce our carbon emissions, we have to do something that changes that behavior
yeah.
to try and save the planet, or else we accept we can't save it.
It's a necessity, is what the argument is. Okay, it's fascinating stuff, and I'm sure it'll be discussed at the conference over the 2 days in it, but thanks very much for talking, giving us your perspective on it this morning.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you.